Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and also PWTorch.com, the website, and MMATorch.com, the website, along with our apps available in the Apple or Android app stores. And you just have to search PW Torch and then MMA Torch to download our free apps on your phone, with daily news updates, commentary, live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, special features, editorials, flashbacks, and more. Speaking of which, right now on MMATorch.com is a flashback article that I wrote just over 20 years ago on UFC battling in the courts to avoid being banned by the state of Michigan, which would have caused them to have to cancel or relocate their upcoming pay-per-view event at Cobo Hall. A fascinating story from the pages of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter before there were any dedicated MMA websites. The Torch was a pioneer in covering ultimate burgeoning sport of mixed martial arts, and you can get a taste of that right now over at MMATorch.com. There's also a really good editorial that Jamie Pennick put up, real in-depth with his point of view on the Ariel Helwani situation and the media ban. I talked about that with Todd Martin yesterday, a VIP audio analyst for PW Torch, who's also a top credentialed go-to MMA expert and MMA analyst. And we talk mostly pro wrestling every Wednesday, but we round out the show with 5 to 35 minutes of actually sometimes even more than 35 minutes. This week it was more than that, of UFC and MMA talk. Good conversation with Todd yesterday about the Ariel Helwani situation, too, and his being banned temporarily, he and his colleagues being banned for ostensibly being too negative or breaking news that UFC wanted to break themselves on Brock Lesnar. Really complex story, fascinating story. Todd and I got into it yesterday, a good discussion on it. Bruce Mitchell and I talked about it the next day on Sunday last weekend, and now Jamie Pennick has an article up over at MMATorch.com. Seriously, if you're a UFC fan, it might be UFC's best-kept secret in a lot of quarters. UFC fans' best-kept secret in a lot of quarters. MMATorch.com, it's great coverage. It absolutely deserves a daily visit from you, either on the app, our mobile site, or our desktop site at MMATorch.com. They also have a weekly podcast. The MMATorchLivecast.com podcast homepage is where to go to find that show. So anyway, cool stuff. Sorry we started the show a little bit late. Blog Talk actually was having some issues with their host Direct Connect. They have three different channels. All three were marked as busy. So I don't know if they're having technical problems or just way too many hosts were trying to host all at once today. So we had to go old school, and I've got to call in via landline as host. So it's going to sound like we're back in 2014 here on the live cast. But we'll do our best in post-production to clean it up and make it sound at least acceptable as kind of a one-time exception. Our scheduled guest today, as I've advertised, Matt Morgan. He is not with us yet. He had a prior engagement this morning that he was hoping would afford him a chance to join the show on time. So I'm still waiting to hear from him. But what we're going to do in the meantime, and this could last 5 minutes or 55 minutes, we're going to be joined by Johnny Fairplay to talk about last night's NXT show. And I'm excited to talk about last night's NXT show. And excited Johnny Fairplay back on the program. He was on with me last month on Tuesday in our rotating co-host spot on Tuesdays, reviewing Raw and, of course, other current events in wrestling on Tuesdays, but usually it centers around Raw. And he did a great job. He's always a good guest. He is our, David Letterman, when a guest wasn't able to join them at the last second, Regis Philbin would walk across the street and join him in studio. Johnny, do you like a Regis Philbin comparison?
What's that?
Are you okay with being compared to Regis Philbin as it relates to him being the last second fill-in for David Letterman when Letterman would have a guest who wasn't able to make it on time?
I was about to bring it up if you didn't, so I guess so.
All right, good. We want to take calls on NXT TakeOver or any topics that you are interested in talking about today. Open phone line Thursday until Matt Morgan joins us. In fact, even if and when Matt joins us, it'll still be open line Thursday. We want to hear your phone calls. We want to hear what you have to say on our phone lines. Our phone number, 646-721-9828. You can also email us right now at 109 Eastern, 1009 West Coast time. Email us at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Johnny, what just overview without going over everything in detail, how would you rank last night's NXT TakeOver special relative to other events, be it an ROH pay-per-view, a TNA pay-per-view, WWE pay-per-view, and especially other NXT TakeOver shows?
Well, speaking of Ring of Honor, I think I'm going to catch the Best in the World coming up in Concord, North Carolina in 2 weeks.
Excellent.
That Friday night pay-per-view live in Carolina. So I'll have a better comparison to that at that time.
I haven't asked Bruce Mitchell yet. Is Bruce going to that? Are you going to get Bruce to go? Johnny? Did we lose you? Are you there? All right. We're going to just go ahead and go to our first break right now. We'll come back and get Johnny back in reception range and go to our first break. When we come back, your phone calls and more conversation. Let's talk NXT TakeOver especially, but really anything. We can talk Ariel Helwani too. We talked about that a lot on the VIP side of things, and that good article from in-depth article from Jamie Pennick over at MMATorch.com could be a launching point too. So if you're on hold, stay on hold, and if you're not yet, give us a call, 646-721-9828.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, we are back on PW Torch Livecast. You can find this show on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. That is pwtorchlivecast.com. We have a sponsor on this program who we love talking about, and so far the feedback has been great for this new sponsor, and that is Loot Crate. We had a great month of signups last month, and I continue to hear from people who really enjoy this product. Johnny Fairplay, our guest on today's Interview Thursday, is among them. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic, geek, and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. Make sure to head over to lootcrate.com and enter coupon code PWTorch to save $3 on any subscription. That's lootcrate.com. Enter coupon code PWTorch. They ship to 27 countries, so you're probably among them, even if you're not in the United States. Loot Crate guarantees over $40 in retail value in every crate, sometimes a lot more. The way it works is there's a theme each month, a different theme, and you're surprised by the theme. You open the box and you see what it's all about. The items are curated around a specific theme, such as major movies, video game releases, as well as pulling from pop culture franchises, including Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, The Legend of Zelda, and many more. Johnny, I know that you are a subscriber to Loot Crate, and you have been a fan of Loot Crate. You've expressed that. Go ahead and give a little detail on how you've liked that service so far.
Love it. I've been getting them for over a year. Last month was the Thanos Infinity Gauntlet oven mitt. I know Shane Helms, the Hurricane, was insanely jealous when he saw my pics on Instagram. And this month I got I had no desire to see the Warcraft movie. I got a Warcraft T-shirt. I've worn it a couple times. I ran into a beer rep in the area, Actually, he went to the Winston-Salem Johnny and June's wrestling show that Bruce wrote an amazing column about. And he was wearing his Loot Crate Warcraft T-shirt. So it's insane. I mean, like, it's just cool stuff. And once you join Loot Crate, which is awesome in and of itself, there's another program called Level Up that you can add in addition to that and get, like, specialty hoodies or stuff just for girls. So I'm actually about to up my subscription to the Level Up program, which is part of Loot Crate.
Very cool. So if you want to join this Loot Crate, you have to go to lootcrate.com and enter coupon code PWTORCH. Thanks, everybody. Johnny, you're talking about the ROH show when your phone dropped off. Have you talked to Bruce Mitchell,
yes,
Torch Senior Columnist? Is he going to be there in person?
I just found out about the show last night. So
okay.
I had no
idea. We got to get him out there.
That Ring of Honor had a show coming so close. So yeah, we'll exchange notes, hopefully. As far as the comparison to that, you know, I will find out. As far as other NXT specials, on the letter score, I give it an A. You know, I thought it was a great show. Was it as good as TakeOver Dallas? No. Was it as good as TakeOver Brooklyn? No. But that bar was set so high on each of those that it's not even fair. So comparing it to a WWE Network special, not necessarily, you know, the quote-unquote pay-per-views, compared to other pay-per-views, it was right up there at the top.
I definitely enjoyed the show. Being at Full Sail and just the lineup, it didn't feel like the WrestleMania of NXT, but I think, indisputably good event. Although I was surprised, the initial poll on WWE's, I think it was their Twitter account, they asked people what they liked it or not. It was like 60-40 giving it a thumbs up. You know, people say that the ardent fans who read websites like PW Torch are the ones who are hard to please. I don't know where they got 40% of people who watched that show to vote on the WWE account that it was a thumbs down, unless they were just people who wanted to see all baby faces win and they were mad that, you know, Finn Balor didn't win, or if they were the type of fan who said, well, if John Cena's not on the show, it's a thumbs down. In our Torch poll, we've got a 92% thumbs up level, 7% thumbs in the middle, 2% thumbs down. I mean, just overwhelmingly positive. So, it doesn't mean they thought it was a show of the year, but man, 51% rated it 8, 9, or 10, an excellent pay-per-view. So, it's always good. Let's intersperse into our conversation, Johnny, some phone calls and get those rolling. So I do invite people who are listening to us live to give us a call here, 646-721-9828. Let's go to our first caller here and go to area code 609. 609, you're on the live cast. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. Demetrius from New Jersey.
Who from New Jersey?
Demetrius.
Oh, Demetrius, great. What have you got for us, Demetrius?
I'm not hoping to see it. I was hoping Matt was here because I got the nickname Matrix from a few years ago, so. my question is, I mean, like 2 weeks ago, my cable box went out, so I started binge watching the network, and I was watching WrestleMania 24, and it was a very good show, and from what I know was the year before, Mr. Kennedy was supposed to win the world title with a cash in and win. And my question here is, if Kennedy had cashed in on the Undertaker, not gotten injured, how would the entire landscape of the year of 2007 leading to 2008 and even that WrestleMania 24 have changed? Like, would Kennedy have been the main event? Would, would certain people like someone like the Great Khali have never won the world title? You know, how would that have all changed? And I have another question after that. Should I say that now or wait till you answer this one?
Well, for me, I would have to categorize that as an Ask Wade Keller VIP question, because I would actually want to go back and kind of put myself in that time frame and brush up on that moment in history. So if you're a VIP member, drop me an email on that, because that's the type of question I like to dive into on those. But maybe Johnny can give a better answer. I can't just place myself in that moment right now. My memory's just not good enough to on the cuff do that. Johnny, how about you, though?
If memory serves correct, didn't Edge take out Mr. Kennedy to take his Money in the Bank spot?
Yes.
Isn't that how that worked? So I see it dramatically affecting Edge. I mean, I think that was the launch of Edge's, you know, big run. So I think it would have curbed that at least temporarily, possibly, you know, forever. You know, who knows? But yeah, I think that the person it would directly affect the most would have been Edge. As far as Mr. Kennedy, he's a friend of mine. I like the guy. I mean, I think things probably would have been better for him. So, but then again, he had his problems there and in TNA. So you know, maybe they would have surfaced regardless of what was going on. So, but maybe that was the launch pad for his problems. So you never know.
Well, I think what we learned too, what we learned too in watching Ken Anderson in TNA is, I mean, I think he sort of had the Dane Cook trajectory of a career. You know, that he was really hot. He was kind of a Paul Heyman guy. Vince McMahon liked him. Paul, you know, manipulated Vince McMahon by saying, use the name Kennedy because that's Vince's middle name, and he'll like you for that. I mean, Paul knows all the tricks. But I think the trajectory of that shtick and that gimmick was limited for Ken. I think that, you know, holding the microphone and doing that shtick was nice, but I think everybody was waiting for him to reach that next level as a main event caliber wrestler, a main event caliber promo. And I think what happened was he was the new toy to play with. Vince liked him and wanted to give him a big opportunity. But once that once he started touching that main event level, regardless of him being injured or opening his mouth to the media in a way that was detrimental, that he's kind of admitted to, making some boneheaded statements, Ken Anderson was going to hit a ceiling regardless. Now, had he got, he might have hit a ceiling higher up on the roster, or maybe if he didn't have the setbacks he had, he would have continued to improve. But seeing what I saw in TNA and really even seeing limitations in WWE, I don't know that he was ever going to become that centerpiece guy that I think was considered in the realm of possibility during his very early run in WWE. There's some guys who just don't have main event caliber WWE style matches in them. And as much as people sometimes not rip on WWE's work rate, because that's probably a 25-year-old attitude that long-term fans kind of had. Well, WWF, that's where the lesser work rate is, and you got to go to the NWA or other areas to see good work rate. That said, I think WWE has a higher standard, and I just don't think I've ever seen Ken in a true top-tier WWE main event style match. Johnny, do you think that's right in a kind of a macro sense with Ken, that he just never quite reached that level of being a main event caliber centerpiece act?
Well, that and remember he had that creepy beard thing going. he you know, when you grow a beard, there's a space, you know, like you have hair underneath your lip, and there's a space, and then there's hair below that.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have that space, and it's possibly the creepiest thing I've ever seen, especially like bright blonde. Like, yeah. So no, that was working against him as well.
So, yeah, well, but how about my question? Yeah, Johnny, I appreciate the observation only that could only come from you, but do you think that had he not had any setbacks and been suspended, do you think that he would have ended up being able to stay on an upward trajectory, or do you think that there was a lower ceiling than main event level guy?
I think there was a cap on it. I mean, like, at first you saw glimpses of, like, I saw him as like a stunning Steve Austin. And we saw the maturation process from stunning Steve to Stone Cold. So I think at first glance you're like, wow, you know, can we be on the ground floor on something like that? And I think, unfortunately for Ken, there was a lower ceiling than I was hoping for.
And I mean, he got chances. I mean, he took on John Cena on Raw. He feuded with Shawn Michaels. I mean, this he was given, I think Jeff Hardy, too, was a feud was in there with Jeff Hardy. I mean, he was given opportunities. And I actually, I mean, I'm kind of curious.
He, and he was at Kennedy. He was Kennedy after Mr. McMahon's middle name.
Exactly.
That's huge.
Yeah, so I would be, now that we're going on about 10 years since his, since his big push, it would actually be interesting to go back and look at what I was saying about those matches at the time. And refresh my memory, because he is fascinating. He's one of those guys who I remember seeing him at First Avenue in downtown Minneapolis when he was getting a big push in WWE and just chatting with him briefly. And I remember just thinking, this is going to be a local guy who makes it big. But I just think, again, I want to go back and look at my match reviews, but I don't remember ever thinking, man, did he step up? I bet that's a performance that impressed McMahon. By contrast, AJ Styles has. You know what I mean? Obviously, AJ's resume just blows away Ken Anderson's at the time, with Ken Anderson just simply going through WWE developmental and a little bit of indie work early in his career. But AJ, was one of those guys, he got main event spots and he blew McMahon away and he's set, he's made. And I think Kennedy just was always kind of on that brink of not quite impressing McMahon enough to do that. But obviously I don't know if it's maturity or attitude or judgment issues hurt him also. Along the way, as did I just think kind of that Dane Cook trajectory. I don't know that character, when he's done it in TNA, it just sort of felt, especially when Vince Russo was booking TNA and trying to push him as the edgy guy who's an asshole all the time, and it was just eye-rollingly bad and derivative and redundant and dated, and it just didn't seem like he had much beyond that. I think he's talented. I just think being saddled with doing kind of a Dane Cook shtick limited what might have been a wider range of personality that he could have had. Let's go back to Demetrius, though, and get his any follow-up he has and also his next question, too.
Actually, that was a really good insight on it. And my other question is about Jack Swagger. I had almost a similar question about Mr. Kennedy, because I almost forgot Jack Swagger was still even with the company after I saw him on Monday night.
Yeah, he's an interesting comparison to Ken Anderson, yeah.
So my question is, if he hadn't gotten arrested, let's say back in 2013, do you think he'd still be in the same position he is right now, or would he have a more prominent role, like what he looked like he was going to have back in 2013? Because I know he doesn't have really the same kind of personality that Ken Anderson had, but it seemed like they were going to try to do something more than until he got arrested. So that's my question there. That's pretty much it.
I'll throw it to Johnny first. Johnny, what do you think on that? I certainly have an opinion.
I mean, if you look at Jack Swagger, you feel like he has all the tools. I mean, he is deceptively big. I mean, he is a big boy. He's got the wrestling background. That lift is working against him. And he also, there's a goofiness about him that I can't separate from the character. Like, I don't see him being a tough heel or face with that goofiness that I've attached to him in my head.
One of the problems with Swagger is, I mean, yes, he fell asleep at a booking meeting, and that was not a good thing to do. And basically, you have to work very hard to overcome that. But also, he isn't a guy who eats, sleeps, and breathes wrestling. And the top guys who make it in WWE, they give off the vibe to management that wrestling is all they want. And even if somebody is talented and has a look and has the size like Jack Swagger has in a lot of categories, he checks a lot of boxes, if he doesn't want it really badly and he has a few demerits on his record, though, that's a combination that's going to pretty much doom you to being the last option. And if you look at when WWE had all these injuries and a stripped-down roster, Jack Swagger didn't get a big push. AJ Styles did, a guy who's a foot shorter than him practically. You know, Jack has size, he has some pedigree, a lot of pedigree, but he has demerits. And he doesn't want it. He's not a pro wrestling guy. And management wants people who want it really badly. And he, I mean, that's obviously he wouldn't still be there if he didn't have some attributes, and he does. But he isn't the guy who shows up just eager for work and eager to really, really make a to make an impact and convey that he's that he is willing to sacrifice and contribute ideas and advance as a character. It's just one of those things behind the scenes that just isn't clicking with him. Anyway, Demetrius, thank you for the call. We have enough background noise. I kind of want to move on to other topics and other subjects here. Let's go to our next caller here and go to area code 773. 773, please state your name and where you're calling from. I hear Boris from Chicago.
Yes, I was trying to get somewhere. I'm at work, so I was trying to get somewhere quiet real quick. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch the next, pay-per-view, but I will find a way to watch it. But I didn't get a chance to, but I did hear how it went, and it's just comparing, to the Raw product. Is it possible, if NXT did, was in the place of Raw, could you still do the same thing? That's my first question.
Boris, that makes no sense. I'm sorry. If NXT was in the place of Raw, I don't understand.
Okay, the product NXT. The way they allow it to do wrestling, like the tag team was introduced by Paul Ellering, all these new elements, and closing one story and opening up another storyline. Can NXT survive in the place of Raw if they had to do 3 hours?
Now I understand. Yeah. Johnny, I think NXT is tremendous. I think booking-wise, the way they do things, the talent they feature, the finishes to the matches, the presentation, it's pretty close to checking all the boxes that I think are the smart way to do things. But they have, every couple months, a 2-2.5 hour live special. And otherwise, they're a one-hour weekly show. And that is a tremendous advantage because you're always left wanting more. There's always plenty of time to build up to main events. The main event talent aren't overexposed against each other. If Dash and Dawson took on Jordan and Gable as often on television as we've seen wrestlers in the Money in the Bank match, for instance, coming up a week from Sunday, face each other in various forms of matches, TakeOver wouldn't have been, that tag match wouldn't have been as good. I mean, it wouldn't have seemed as good. It would seem like, well, we've seen this all before. There's no way that NXT wouldn't run into some of the problems that Raw does. Now, I think NXT does things better. So if you gave them their budget and the roster and had the booking team and the production team doing Raw, using even with the challenge of having to fill out 3 hours plus monthly pay-per-views, I think that it would be a better show. Because I think the way WWE does things with Raw, while there's some things they do really well, I think it's stale and a little bit set in their ways. But it's not fair to say that NXT would not have some new challenges with a weekly three-hour show and monthly pay-per-views. Johnny, what do you think?
I don't want to see anything for 3 hours. That's my first vote. Please, I would feel comfortable with NXT going 2 hours on Monday night, and I think they could hold their own and be just fine. I mean, last night, that tag match, I honestly felt like I was watching Arn and Tully versus the Rock and Roll Express from 1986, and it felt good. I mean, everything about, I mean, and like you said, we haven't seen them. I mean, I thought their match at TakeOver Dallas was good. I guess they internally had problems. There's a couple, two botched spots that really bothered them. But, I mean, if you've called NXT Live the touring brand around the horn, that's the match they've had every single show. And so they've got that match down. So, even though they've presented it in each town, you haven't seen it on television. And the right guys, I mean, like, I think American Alpha's great. I think the Revival's great. The last time they met on a network special, American Alpha won. The next time they met was last night, the Revival won, because they're both awesome tag teams. They're both the best tag team, and it just depends on the night on who's going to pull it out. And I like that story more than anything else. That was amazing. I mean, that's not 50-50 booking for the sake of 50-50 booking.
No, that's
50-50 booking for the sake of what these are two great, awesome teams, and we're telling an awesome story. And it, the same with Arn and Tully and the Rock and Roll Express back in the day.
And 50-50 booking is an outcome happens and it's forgotten the next day or the next week, and it's just there to fill TV time and not create any kind of a ruckus with it seeming like anybody's on a hot streak and somebody else is on a cold streak. That's 50-50 booking. It's not 50-50 booking to have a great feud where you have two big matches culminate and one team wins one and another team wins another one. It's technically they're 1-1 or 50-50 in that situation, but that doesn't mean that it's just the kind of lazy booking where outcomes don't matter that WWE often promotes with Raw, SmackDown, and their pay-per-views. So, but what about the larger general question Boris brings up, which is a good topic? Could NXT take its current roster, fill it out a little bit more, but have the same team, production values, champions, the whole aesthetic, the whole vibe, as Triple H put it? Would that, if that were 2 or 3 hours on Raw on Monday, and they had a monthly pay-per-view to fill out, would it be better, or would so much of what makes NXT better just get wiped away, like you said, because it's it'd be 3 damn hours?
I was asked last night. You know, I had some friends over for NXT, and they were just like, you know, where do you see the draft working? You know, what is your optimal goal for this draft? And I was just like, optimally, I want Vince to say Raw is mine, and we get the Big Show, and we get Kane, and please, dear God, can we have Randy Orton there? I really, really want him there, and I'm looking forward to a feud with him and Sheamus. I haven't seen that match before. That'd be great. And then on SmackDown, I want NXT. That's what I want, and I think they would hold their own just fine. I think they can sustain.
What do you think of Triple H and his explanation for NXT TakeOver The End? He did the Facebook interview in kind of kayfabe storyline mode last night and was like, well, it kind of means that, well, it's sort of the end of NXT as a developmental territory and the beginning of us as our own brand. And I'm like, well, that's not the end. It's been its own brand since at least TakeOver Brooklyn last year. You know, I mean, I don't know if that was a coming out moment or what, but it just felt like he was being coy, or they were being cute, or they were trolling, or they changed plans, you know, that it was going to be the end of something and the beginning of something else, and now they're just trying to, it's like Eric Bischoff with a big surprise, and it was a Goldberg heel turn. It felt to me like there should have been something more, and if not, shame on them, because it was a stupid name to say, well, because it's the end of the Joe Balor feud. Well, that's every pay-per-view should, you know, or so many pay-per-views headline with the end of a feud. So I just didn't know what to make of that, but I do wonder, was it originally going to be more than that or something different than that?
I'm with you. I think it was supposed to be more. The whole brand extension, I don't think they figured anything out. You know, when they came out, 2 weeks ago, and just like, oh, we're still discussing it. Like, I think that's a shoot. And I'm just like, don't discuss it until you have something. It's horrible. So, no, I think Triple H was told one thing, and then probably yesterday afternoon he was told something else, and he was just like, oh, thanks. Glad I'm doing this whole Facebook thing to promote the thing that you guys agreed to let me do, and now I have to kind of walk back on my word. So this is going to be fun.
So
I think that's why he purposely spoiled that we're getting Nakamura versus Joe at Brooklyn.
To make some news.
He's just like, you know what, you're gonna ruin my day. Here, I'm going to go ahead and spoil what the main event's going to be. Thanks. Here we go. We'll have fun. Here's 40 minutes. Goodbye.
Yeah. All right, we're going to come back, talk more NXT.
That's my guess.
We'll come back, talk more NXT TakeOver. We'll check the email question list. We'll also take some calls. We've got a couple people on hold. We'll take 801 next. So 801, stand by after this second break of the show. We'll come back and do some more conversation on NXT TakeOver and other topics.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're About to shop at Amazon? Don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTORCH.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we're back. If you're just joining us live, it is Interview Thursday on June 9th, 2016. I'm Wade Keller, editor-publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, host of this show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We were hoping Matt Morgan would be finished with an engagement he had this morning, an appointment that he had this morning, and so far he has not been able to join the show. But I am happy to have Johnny Fairplay on with us again, who watched NXT TakeOver last night, and I always wish we could talk more NXT than we do on this show, but Tuesdays, which is the day I host, is usually dominated by Raw, so it's actually really fun to hit a few random topics, but among them NXT TakeOver, although we did earlier talk about Ken Kennedy and his push and a couple other things. So let's just continue with phone calls and see where callers lead us, and go next to area code 801. 801, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Derek from Utah.
Hey, Derek, good to hear from you again. What have you got for Johnny and me today?
Just I got to echo Johnny's comment about the tag match last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. I did see some of those resemblances of the 80s-style wrestling with the shine spot, clear the ring, get the pop. That's Rock and Roll Express 101 stuff. And also I appreciated the fact, kind of like the En Vogue thing in tag team wrestling for the end of the match, just to turn to a chaotic, hit a spot, next group, and hit a spot. Ref kind of just sits off and wanders in the outer sphere. And they didn't do that last night. It kept the tag match format until the end and still had those modern twists and turns to get to the next step in the story. So I thought that was a phenomenal match.
I echo your sentiment. I love what tag team wrestling is in NXT. I think, there's good tag matches in WWE, but there's something that happens when tag teams go to WWE in terms of how their matches are produced and how they're presented and how the announcers call it and where it is on the card. And it, in some ways, it is hard to put a finger on it. I mean, I have challenged myself for, 20 years to try to figure out what it is that used to be kind of magical, like you said, Johnny, about Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, Von Erich's Freebirds, that WWE has had trouble capturing. And it, in part, it just isn't a tag team territory, and it doesn't have
in its core, or in its DNA, is probably a better way to put it, an affinity for tag team wrestling. And so, I mean, I loved the mid-80s British Bulldogs, Hart Foundation, Dream Team, Greg Valentine, Brutus Beefcake, leading into the Killer Bees and the Rougeau Brothers, leading into Demolition, and the Can-Am Connection, leading into Strike Force. Like that was the mid to late 80s, even into the early 90s. Arn and Tully coming in as the Brainbusters, the Rockers. That was my favorite era, and I think the best era for WWF tag team wrestling. Now, Edge and Christian, the Hardys, the Dudleys, that was pretty good. But Johnny, throwing to you for a minute here, how do you look at WWF's tag team style, the way they present that division, and do you have any favorite eras over the years in terms of groups of teams that were making a historical mark in the timeline of WWF and WWE?
Well, in the 80s, I used to go to the Greensboro Coliseum every month. I had seats behind Bruce Mitchell. I was
oh, God.
Front row.
So you didn't get to see anything.
And it was horrible. It was the worst. But no, I remember going to shows. Rick Flair is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And I remember seeing Midnight Express versus the Fantastics or Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll Express. And I would leave, and that would be like the main event before intermission or semi-main, whatever. And that was always the best match of the night. So, I mean, my fondness for it. And I also loved managers, even though Jim Cornette, hates my guts. But I'm sure you're right up there on his fan list with me. But what are we going to do about that? So, going back, like Powers of Pain and the Road Warriors. You know, I love the Road Warriors. I did Vince Russo's podcast a couple weeks ago, and he didn't understand. He's just like, I hear you like NXT, like there's no room for jobbers and wrestling. And I was just like, if it wasn't for jobbers, the Road Warriors would be nothing. And I'm just like, and I think the Road Warriors were the one of the greatest things in my childhood of watching wrestling. I love them. And jobbers made that possible. I mean, if we saw an even back and forth match between them and Arn and Tully, there's nothing special about the Road Warriors. That's my glory days. You know, I like the teams, the Can-Am Connection going into Strike Force, all that. I always thought that was one notch below what Crockett was doing.
Oh, sure, I agree with that too.
That's just a personal opinion.
No, I agree with that. I was talking WWF, but I think Crockett had the best tag team wrestling, a heck of Mid-South, world class. At times, the AWA for sure. There were good tag team territories out there. WWF always treated them as, oh God, there's four payoffs we got to make instead of two. For this match, and if they were any good, they'd be singles wrestlers, and that kind of permeates the majority of the time, I think, how they present the tag division. All right, well, let's go back to Derek and get some follow-up from him or another topic. Go ahead, Derek.
Well, Wade, you asked what points the WWE has lost in tag team wrestling on the main roster, and I think one of the main ones is the manipulation of the ref by the 80s. And the early 90s was a fundamental aspect of getting heel heat in the tag. There was the Rock and Roll or the Express or Absolute Masters of the subtle manipulation of the ref in order to get an unfair advantage. And WWE doesn't allow that in most cases. And that cleverness that makes tag team wrestling nuanced and special is lost because of that fact.
I hadn't picked up on that to the degree that you have, but I think that it's an astute observation. I mean, there are things that work in a tag division, little tricks of the trade, and just policies. You know, I mean, the WWE, and this sort of started happening in the 90s, they got very proud of the WWE, or WWF at the time, WWF style. And, you know, after the WCW merger, I mean, it was just a bunch of snickering. You know, a bunch of guys coming in, and the idea in WWE is they had no idea what they were doing. They really didn't. I mean, Vince watched that Buff Booker match and could not believe that these wrestlers were considered, top tier wrestlers. Now, they weren't. I mean, Booker T sort of was, not at a world class work rate level, but a good worker. But Buff was always the joke was always seen as a joke. But Vince thought, well, this is what I bought. This is what I wasn't watching that beat us for a while. And so there was this, almost it became an arrogance that our way is the only way. And I think that sometimes goes too far. And one thing that's really neat about NXT is that they have created a petri dish that is almost insulated from some of the tendencies that I think WWE has stuck with in a more narrow-minded way. And we see NXT TakeOver specials are sort of a manifestation of the what happens when people who are smart are given the freedom to speak, and that there's some sharp minds who are like, yeah, there's a different way to do things than the way WWE does it. Let's try some of them and see what works. And I think part of what we love about NXT is a manifestation of that.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, let's go next to area code 718. 718, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
What's going on? This is Mike from Brooklyn. How you guys doing?
Doing good, Mike. Thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
Well, a few things. Well, first, you know, to add on what y'all are talking about, you know, as far as the NXT show, I thought it was excellent last night. But it was just one thing that just really got on my nerve and irked my nerve for the night, and that was when those, you know, smart aleck, you know, full sales guys didn't acknowledge or had no idea who Paul, you know, who Precious Paul was. I think that was very disrespectful.
Well, I think there's some confusion
when they
about
saying it, who are you,
Mike? I think there's some confusion about that, because were they, and I want to get Johnny's opinion on this, were they chanting that at the tag team, or were they chanting that at Paul Ellering? What do you think, Johnny?
At first, I thought they were chanting it at Paul Ellering, and I was just like, wow. I'm like, you know, for the smart marks, they're not that smart. And then I was listening to your VIP audio and Jason Powell's, and I can't remember who said it, but it was just like one of you thought that was directed towards the guys in the ring, which I didn't know who they were, so I agreed with that, and I thought that was an accurate statement. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the who are you chant. I've got
right.
it before. Don't like it.
I don't like it, period. You know, I mean, like, whoever they were right, yeah. Johnny, whoever they were chanting it at, it's like you're making yourself the story. You're trying to, you know, turn it into Rocky Horror Picture Show. And it's like, well, if you don't know who they are, you don't chanting who are you is just kind of not – again, you have the right to chant what you want, but we have the right to call you – to say that you're trying to draw undue attention to yourself as a crowd and being obnoxious also. So fans can chant what they want, but
that's
we can
good
go ahead.
It's a good surprise.
Right.
It's a good surprise. If they chant, you know, it's just like, who are you? It's just like, hey, you don't know who I am. That's good. I mean, and after I do what I do, you can boo me if I do something despicable, or you can cheer me if I do something heroic. But chanting who are you, you're hijacking the show, and you're making it, it's like, screw you.
Yeah.
So, no, like, I usually give that, I think that's a really good crowd for the most part. I do not endorse a who are you chant ever. So that's just me personally.
Yeah. Let's go back to Mike. Mike, if we give a little wiggle room to them that maybe they weren't chanting out of Paul Ellering, out of fairness, I'm also sure that there are some, I mean, we say one of our pitches for PW Torch VIP membership is when you become a VIP member, you very quickly will become the type of fan who knows more than the know-it-all fan that you have to put up with who's a friend of yours. You know, like the guy at work or your buddy who reads the free internet sites. You go VIP, you start listening to our audio, reading our back issues, reading the newsletter each week, whatever it is, however it is you consume VIP, you're just going to end up knowing more than that know-it-all who thinks he knows everything because he goes to, you know, Lords of Pain or something like that. And I think that NXT crowd is one of those people, is one of those instances of fans who really are into what they're watching right now. And I love that. I love that when I went to ECW Arena back in the 90s. I mean, it's awesome. but it doesn't mean that they know their history. It doesn't mean that they can't have fun and that it should be held against them. But if you don't know your history, don't wear it as a badge of honor. Have some humility about embarrassing yourself. So if anybody was chanting that at Paul Ellering is not a fringe figure. Paul Ellering is somebody you need to know who he is because he managed, I think, the most famous tag team of all time. And that's a bold statement, but I really, Johnny, who's in contention in the last 50 years as the most famous tag team of all time? Who should be in that conversation with the Road Warriors?
They're number one. I mean, I remember, like, I was good friends with Hawk. Animal and I have hung out, you know, recently, and he's a nice guy, but he's, you know, Hawk and I were, we were much more similar. But I remember I went to, I was living in Los Angeles at the time. There's the hottest club at the time, the Hollywood Canteen. And Hawk had asked me, is just like, hey, you know, whenever I'm in LA, you need to take me to a cool club. And I was like, okay. So he shows up and this place had just turned down DMC from Run DMC. They wouldn't let him in. I think Lucy Liu had to wait 45 minutes to get in, blah, blah, blah. So I told him, just like, hey, when you get here, just go to the front, tell him you're friends with me, you know, you're good. And he's like, so he walks up, and he's wearing a bandana, you know, a tie bandana on his head, you know, fanny pack. You know, black jeans, whatever, and the guy at the door, he goes, Hawk's like, he goes, I'm friends with Johnny Fairplay. He said, let me in. And the guy's like, who are you? He goes, you're never getting. He goes, what are you, like a road warrior or something? He goes, yeah. And the guy's like, are you shitting me? Shooting me? Sorry. He goes, are you really good? Do you have the shoulder pads? Because the shoulder pads are in the trunk. I'll get them. And the guy was like, "This is the coolest day of my life." And I'm just like, okay, one of the hottest clubs in Los Angeles. You know, like Lucy Liu waits. DMC doesn't get in, and the guy marks out for Road Warrior Hawk. Yes, they are indeed. I wouldn't see them doing that for the Rock and Roll Express. I wouldn't see them doing it for Arn and Tully. They wouldn't be doing, you know, possibly the Freebirds, probably not. I think it's just, they were the Hulk Hogan of tag teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, let's go back to Mike. What else have you got for us, Mike?
Also, two more things. I'm going to shoot it at you rapid fire. The first being, you know, like, I actually, you know, Tuesday weighed, and, you know, I want to even have time to think about it, and that's my assessment of, like, where do they go after, you know, the premiere, the July 19th premiere with Battleground, what, 5-6 days after that? And then lastly, what are you guys seeing, you know, for the main event? Do, you know, by that time, do you think they will have dual championships and, you know, two titles, a double main event? That's all I got.
Johnny, what scenarios have run through your head when it comes to Battleground itself? And coming so shortly after the draft, I think they're going to have to announce a lineup for Battleground before the draft, I assume, unless I don't see like that Raw and SmackDown being the beginning of Battleground hype. So to me, it's almost like Battleground might be the last time you have a chance to see wrestler X against wrestler Y because now they're on separate brands. But I could also see them adding something to that live event that will determine who's on which roster. You know, maybe a battle between some Raw and some SmackDown guys who were drafted where the winning team gets some sort of extra. Although the problem with that is why would anyone on SmackDown want there to be, quote, more competition on SmackDown? Like, WWE needs to think this through because the last brand split was damaged by a lack of any kind of sensible structure, you know, because they're not a team. They're not a team trying to work together to beat another team. They're just a roster of wrestlers trying to beat each other up in order to have individual glory. And so if they start doing this team thing of Team SmackDown versus Team Raw, it makes no sense. And I don't think WWE can survive in 2016 making no sense. People want their video games to make sense. They want their fantasy sports competitions to make sense. They want their TV shows on HBO to make sense. they want rules in the NBA finals that make sense. WWE, and people need to tell Vince McMahon this, need to have a structure that makes sense. And I do worry that Battleground could end up being some sort of stupid Raw versus SmackDown battle, as if everybody on SmackDown comes together in unity against Raw for absolutely no explained reason. So that's one of my concerns with that.
I'm actually I feel the most negative you've been about the brand extension. I've sat back and admired your optimism on the brand. Like, I'm just like, I pray Wade's right, because I don't see it going anything like that. I think it's going to be horrible. I think it's going to be over, and I think 6 months is too long to say it's going to be over. I think it's going to be over in 5. You mentioned fantasy football. I think before the brand extension, I think someone needs to explain fantasy football to Vince McMahon. I think someone needs to explain sports to Vince McMahon. I don't think he understands sports. I don't think he understands what divisions mean and all, like, so no, I mean, our last brand extension was so poorly done that I think we're just, it's just going to be the same thing. And as far as Battleground's concerned, they're not concerned with pay-per-view buys like they were. So I could see the entire card being made up in the 2 weeks post, or in the actually 1 week post draft, than it would be a matches that are carrying over from before. That's my guess. I don't know. But going real quick, but, you know, do you think after Battleground, you know, we're gonna have, or is the pay per view after Battleground, is that at SummerSlam, or is there one in between?
I think it is just in SummerSlam.
Okay, so yeah. SummerSlam can be so Battleground can be a split brand pay per view. SummerSlam, of course, I think would have to be a split brand pay per view. Do you really think we're going to individual brand pay per views post SummerSlam? I don't know. That right there is the, you know, be the fork in the road on how this thing is going to go down.
Well, let's look, too. A couple things I want to say, but following SummerSlam, you have Night of Champions. And I'm assuming Night of Champions will feature champions from both brands, that there will be U.S. and IC title matches.
True.
So I think that will be a dual-brand pay-per-view. Then you have Hell in a Cell, followed by Survivor Series. I think Survivor Series will be dual-brand because it's a legacy title.
Yeah.
And I think that could be an event where you see a, quote, rare battle between Raw wrestlers and SmackDown wrestlers fighting over something hopefully tangible, if they fight, and hopefully the parameters are set. Hell in a Cell, it could be a brand-specific pay-per-view, but then I think you would be in a quandary of it, because then the December pay-per-view is TLC, and do you want to do a TLC pay-per-view that's, say, SmackDown only if Hell in a Cell is Raw only? Or do you just say, you know, screw it, we're going to just make all pay-per-views dual-brand pay-per-views, but keep the matches Raw versus Raw and SmackDown versus SmackDown, with the exception of one at Survivor Series? I'm not sure. As for my optimism on the brand split, my optimism isn't that they're going to do it well. My optimism is that it's very easy to do well. It has tremendous benefits if they do it well, and there is nothing standing in their way of it going really well and making especially SmackDown a much better, more relevant program, because it won't be an afterthought each week, because they are putting new pressure on themselves by making it live on Tuesdays and putting John Cena likely on it as the only place you can see Cena. SmackDown will become more important, and I think that structurally is different than the last brand split, and it's one you can't ignore. Vince McMahon had SmackDown initially as the Rock brand, as the John Cena brand, as it was very different, and it was on a broadcast network, and he was serious about it. But once the channel got less prestigious, and once the ratings went down, and it was a pre-tape show, and it was clear Raw became his priority, but that structure's not there. So it's just quick-triggered cynicism to say it's going to be exactly as bad as before, because there's some very specific differences structurally that will, I think, force Vince McMahon to do a better job. There's more at stake and less excuses to not prioritize SmackDown, and I think that is likely to result in some of the mistakes made last time not happening this time. Also, it's years later, and I think there's some people in power, including who have made NXT the success that it has been, who can have some influence on the style and the booking approach that's taken with the brand split. Now, it's saying that I'm pessimistic or negative or not optimistic because I point out how stupid it is to have Raw versus SmackDown with everybody on Raw suddenly uniting to fight SmackDown for no tangible reason when otherwise they're fighting each other to try to win a title. That doesn't mean I think they're going to do it. I'm saying they shouldn't do it, and it would be dumb if they did. But I'm kind of hoping that Triple H and Ryan Ward and, I mean, just, you know, Ed Koski and, I mean, that the whole crew just are like, let's do this better than happened last time. And hopefully the structure is there for Vince McMahon to have some good feedback and listen and just tweak things. Because to me, having two separate rosters on two separate shows where we only get to see Kevin Owens once a week instead of twice a week is so inherently good. I don't know how you can be pessimistic. The overexposure of the top half of the roster and the top third of the roster, to me, is the number one problem in WWE. I mean, like, or certainly top three. So structurally, you're getting rid of structurally one of the number one problems, which is overexposure, over-reliance on a certain small group of wrestlers who are featured too often in 50-50 booking. Now that gets cut in half. It is so, to me, obviously inherently good that it's almost hard to offset the benefit that comes along with that. You throw in the fact that it's live and it's on USA, not pre-taped on some third-rate network. McMahon has a great incentive to make it work. It's the only place to find John Cena. So Vince is going to have a big incentive to make it work, and I think those incentives will lead to him not making some of the same mistakes. I don't think it's naive to say those are reasons to be optimistic about it, but I certainly am not putting my life savings down on there being zero chance that he'll screw it up even worse than last time. That's certainly possible, but I just think structurally it's almost set up as the good that will offset some of the mistakes is almost inherent in the structure. So that's where I've been coming from on this for the past, you know, 2-3 weeks, Johnny.
All right. I have a quick question. All right. I think you're right. I think we get Roman Reigns on Raw. I think we get John Cena on SmackDown. I think everyone on the planet should agree that we have Sami Zayn on one brand and Kevin Owens on the other.
Right.
Which one's on which?
Oh, I don't even know that matters.
Where are you putting Kevin Owens?
Well, see, I
you don't care?
Well, I shouldn't. Well, I don't care that much because I think that is
just as long as they're separate.
Well, as long as they're separate, I don't think it makes a lick of difference. I mean, if SmackDown ends up being a brand, a show. Now, in this, and I've gone over this in depth on VIP audio, and Johnny, you know this, where USA Network doesn't want NXT on Tuesdays. The USA Network executives want a brand extension. They want SmackDown to be as important as Raw, but they want it to be the same vibe. And the argument is with Randy Orton and Cesaro and Bray Wyatt, and we bring in Finn Balor, and we've got AJ Styles and Anderson and Gallows. And, you know, you can list a few other guys that they bring up, you know, perhaps sooner than later, a couple tag teams from NXT to strengthen things up, especially American Alpha. I mean, I'm just not worried at all about depth. I mean, that is not a top 10 concern for me is depth. That seems to be one of the top two things people worry about. I'm not worried about that at all, because now you have to take into consideration that the wrestlers you see on Monday, you're not also going to see on Thursdays getting overexposed. So they're going to be booked in a more, I don't want to say meticulous way, but the damage of being overbooked and overexposed goes away, and the pressure that Vince will feel to protect some of that mid-card talent that he was discarding because it was so easy to just book Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and AJ Styles or whomever the wrestler of choice was to fill out TV time, Seth Rollins, prior to his injury. His tendency was, well, Seth's over, so let's just book him in a lot of segments on both Raw and SmackDown. Well, now he can't just take that easy default route. You know, it's like if you got a bag of potato chips sitting around in your cupboard and you're hungry, you're going to grab the bag of chips because it's easy. But if you don't have the bag of chips and you got something a little healthier in the fridge, it takes a little prep work, you're probably going to go grab the carrots and the hummus and have a better snack because the chips aren't around. To me, Vince McMahon kept reaching for the bag of chips. Whoever I have who I know is over and I can rely on, let's use them a lot on both Raw and SmackDown. Now he's forced to take a little extra effort, or have his writing team take a little extra effort to get over some of the mid-carders that he didn't have the time of day for in the pre-roster split era. And so my optimism is grounded on what I think is common sense human nature. We need these guys to be over. Let's protect them and put some time and effort into making sure that they're over and they're protected, and we look for their strengths and don't dwell on their weaknesses. And I think that's going to happen. So that, to me, matters. Where Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens end up is not particularly germane to whether this works, because I think we kind of have to see what flavor they want SmackDown to have, and does it end up evolving to something different than Raw. At first, it can't look remarkably different than Raw, because USA Network wasn't sold that. But over time, depending on the makeup of the roster and who gets over, there is going to be a different five. They're going to have different writing teams, and they're going to have a different guy on top and different feuds. And ultimately, I think SmackDown has a chance in 3 to 6 months to be a brand that's differentiated substantially enough that wearing a SmackDown T-shirt will say something, what will be a message that a fan wants to send to society when he wears it in public, like wearing a Bullet Club T-shirt is right now, or an NXT T-shirt is right now. I think there's a good chance that SmackDown will have its own identity in a way that people wear a T-shirt to say, I'm a SmackDown guy, not a Raw guy. And also, vice versa. I'm a Raw guy, not a SmackDown guy. Ultimately, they don't want people to hate one and love the other, but it's okay to have an affinity and a preference for one over the other.
And would you have Corey Graves as your color guy with Mauro Ranallo on Tuesday night?
I would go, yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
Yes. I think having a sports-like contemporary vibe, having somebody cool like Corey Graves. You know, I love Corey Graves last night at the pre-show. He's like, there's nothing else in the world I'm qualified for other than sitting here next to you, you know, like talking about pro wrestling. Like, that's funny, you know? He's got tattoos up to his chin, and he knows contemporary references that I'm old enough to have to look up because I'm too busy doing my stuff now to keep up on everything going on in pop culture, and Corey Graves keeps up on it. Whereas Jerry Lawler, I got to look back in the history books to figure out what he's talking about sometimes. So, I think if SmackDown becomes basically, SmackDown has a chance to become an experimental 2 hours, but gradually ease into it. Not shock USA Network executives where they go, wait, what? This doesn't look like WWE and the product we paid this X amount of money for. But it has a way to become the cool contemporary brand for 18 to 49-year-old males. Not that kids won't like it, not that 55-year-olds won't like it, but that demo needs to be served a product that is absent some of the things that are Vince McMahon's favorite things to do. And SmackDown is a place to stand out, not just through addition, but I think subtraction. Just have SmackDown be a place that is absent some of the things Vince needs to see once a week, at least on Mondays.
Paul Heyman was on the Sam Roberts show, which you were recently on, a few months ago. They did a live thing at Caroline's, and Paul Heyman, he put over Corey Graves. He's just like, like they were asking, like, who's the number one person? If you could grab anyone from NXT, who would you get?
Oh, wow.
And he's like, Corey Graves. He goes, easy. He goes, that is the Joe Rogan of WWE, and they're insane for not using him as already. And Jason Powell last night, his review is exactly, he's the Joe Rogan of WWE. I mean, it's so, I mean, like, you know, my fiance, she hates wrestling. She watches it, and, you know, and she does not look like Bailey's mom. She has a Bailey t-shirt that says I'm a hugger that I purchased for, that she wears after request. So, but I mean, she saw Corey, she's seen Corey Graves. She's like, yeah, he's good. He's real good. Like, I don't think she's heard a word he said. She just thinks he's real good at his job.
Well, here's the thing. This is I've had indication. This even goes back to last year when Daniel Bryan just wanted to go to SmackDown to do his thing and be left alone and not be ruined, not be talked down to, stay away from the McMahons and all that. And I talked to people in WWE production when the lineup change was made on the announcers. Speaking of announcers, and the idea was, you know, SmackDown's going to be a little less McMahon style announcing, a little more sports like. I mean, those seeds have been planted for a while. But the John Cena injury, the Seth Rollins injury, not being on USA, convincing USA to move them live, a few things had to fall into place. But I've had enough anecdotal indications over the last 15, 16 months to think that SmackDown, there is an internal desire to have SmackDown be the place for things to happen and wrestlers to be featured and announcers to get promoted that Vince McMahon doesn't get. So if Vince goes, I don't get Bayley, then that's Ryan Ward's job to say, Vince, we get him, we get her, let us do our thing, stay hands off for 4 months and let us show you. And Vince goes, okay, but you better not let me down. And so if SmackDown becomes the playground for things that Vince McMahon doesn't get but has gotten over in NXT, that's where SmackDown can end up with a different vibe. That doesn't mean there's no John Cena or no New Day, but it means it's a place where Vince goes, all right, I'm willing to not mortgage Raw, but I'm willing to give a little more leeway on SmackDown because there is a track record. You've made your case. Do what you want to do with Bayley, and I'll sit back and watch. That kind of thing. So that's what I'm hoping for. You talked about your fiance's reaction. Evil Ken on Twitter said, my 9-year-old daughter last night was watching NXT and said, is this only on the network because you have to pay to watch the better wrestlers? And, you know, I mean, yeah. There just comes a point where Vince McMahon has to listen, you know, be told these anecdotes of this appeals to a fan base that's not being served right now. The vibe of the show of NXT and the way that it's done is different than your vision, Kevin Dunn's vision. And give us a little leeway. Let us do our thing, and it'll work because it's working in NXT. It works in Brooklyn. And that's where I have some optimism. There's enough anecdotal indications that Vince can be talked into that and would be willing to let that happen outside of the auspices of Raw, as long as there's a John Cena structurally as the anchor to satisfy the USA Network executives.
I would bet my career on Bayley.
But yep.
It's like you said, you know, give me 4 months, leave me alone, Vince. I would bet if I'm Triple H or whoever, I would put every dollar I have on Bayley. I think she's that amazing. But like Mark Madden said, there's an expiration date on Bayley as well.
That's I thought Mark made a good point with Bruce Mitchell on the VIP Bruce Mitchell audio show 2 weekends ago. You don't want to wait too long on her. You don't. I thought Bayley and her interaction with Asuka last night was tremendous too. I really just thought that was a nice little teaser of something to come later. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. Johnny, we had an email question about NXT, and I want to get to this. This is Mike emailing. He goes, while I believe most of us figured Samoa Joe would win at NXT last night, I'm pretty surprised that he defeated Balor by pinfall. As you know, when Joe won the title, he pinned Normal Finn because it was at a house show. I fully believe that the cage match stiff was going to be used to allow Joe to win the match by escape, but allow the Demon to remain unpinned while moving on to the main roster. Am I overthinking this, or did they ruin the mystique of Finn Balor's alter ego right before his potential promotion to the main roster? What do you think, Johnny? Good question.
I think he's right in several aspects. The only thing that I disagree with is NXT is old. I mean, it's booked like Crockett 86. I mean, from top to bottom. You know, the culmination of this feud was a cage fight. Crockett 86, we didn't see Ric Flair escape from the cage. We saw Ric Flair pin the guy. Mm-hmm. So that's the finish that it had to be.
I admire NXT
maybe
doing.
Finn Balor didn't.
I admire NXT doing finishes. I do. I'm never ever against pinfall finishes. I was even for Undertaker losing in the streak. I mean, I think you need to own, if you book a matchup, you need to own it and come up with a finish. And in the end, your promotion, you will be more successful if fans have faith that when they get excited to see a match, they're going to see an outcome. You can't do, was it Pedro Hizo and Randy Couture with the eyelash slash, or was it I think that was a fight where that happened. You can't just have matches, fights that people are really looking forward to not have finishes, and because it's a cop-out, and people just lose faith, and they start they stop investing their emotions in wanting to see an outcome if you don't get them. If Super Bowls sometimes, or NBA playoff series sometimes ended with 3-3 ties, or Game 7 was decided because a fan used a mirror to shine a light in LeBron's eyes, so the ref called for a DQ, people would stop caring about the NBA Finals. So I'm not one to be against pinfall finishes ever, or submissions ever. And I don't think it hurts Finn Balor that much, Johnny. I mean, that's not a story that needs to carry over to the main roster when he gets promoted. I think for NXT fans who are invested in the Demon character not being Finn, it's a blemish, but I don't think it stops anyone from investing in his matches going forward.
Well, maybe the Demon didn't need to wrestle last night. Maybe this is so personal that Finn Balor was going to fight Samoa Joe in the cage as Finn Balor.
Yeah. But I don't think the Demon, I think for TakeOver, he's got to be the Demon. And I don't think it hurts him that much to get pinned. That was a killer move.
And I don't think it hurts. But if you really wanted to protect that streak, I'm just saying.
True. I don't know that. I don't like streaks. There's three words for you. Four words. I don't like streaks. I can't count. I think once every 10 years, you can make some money with one in the short run. But it just paints you into a corner. I think it's a bad booker's shortcut to trying to get somebody over, and I don't think there's usually a good outcome to them that leads to anybody being over. And it makes a wrestler seem one-dimensional. Goldberg, he's over because of the streak. Well, after the streak, then what? I don't want the demon to be unpinned. Undertaker had a streak by accident. It made sense, and they made a lot of money with it, and it was once a year. And it's different than a guy is undefeated always. When you reach the stature of Undertaker,
that was my favorite Thursday.
Yeah,
that was my favorite Thursday interview ever. By the way, Wade, no one. I don't think he's ever said it anywhere else but with you, Vince Russo. That Thursday interview Thursday. You know, like someone called in and asked about the Undertaker streak, and he was just like, I had no clue. He goes, if I had known, he goes, I would have ended it in a heartbeat. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I was like, wow.
There's, I joke that if you listen to Disco Inferno on the Wednesday live cast with Pat McNeil, you can find out what I think about everything by thinking the opposite of what Disco says. And that is almost always true, by the way. I think pretty much the opposite of Disco Inferno and everything. And Disco Inferno and Vince Russo have similar philosophies. They agree on a lot of things. They're in lockstep. And I think if you want to know what I think is best for business, listen to Vince Russo and think the opposite. It's not personal. I know Vince doesn't like it when I'm hard on him, but I mean, it's my job to just call it as I see it. And it's hard for me to understate how much I think Vince Russo doesn't know what works in this industry at this stage. I think he was invaluable, and I give him more credit from my chair than I think anybody does for what he did to move wrestling into a new era. But I think outside of the context of the launch of the Attitude Era with the talent roster he had and his place in history and that moment in time, I don't think he's done much good since, and I think he's actually done incredible damage, and I think it's actually rather indisputable if you actually sit through his booking how truly awful his ideas are and how just bad for business his approach is. And it sounds like it's personal, and it's not. I've liked Vince. Every time I've dealt with him in person and on interviews, I enjoy my interaction with him, but I got to say what I believe, and that is that almost everything he says I think is wrong about booking philosophy in this industry. All right, John, let's go ahead and take another call, Johnny.
Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead and insert. Yeah, I thought your pause was you were done, so go ahead. I definitely want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, real quick, I don't know if anyone's going to bring this up. Brock Lesnar, I mean, we're not talking Monday Night Raw. It's amazing. It's a Thursday.
Nice, yeah.
Wins Roman Reigns can turn heel. But Brock Lesnar, Coach was on Busted Open Radio. I don't remember if it was Monday or Tuesday. I believe it was Tuesday. And he had talked with Chael Sonnen. He also talked with Rock. And he said off the record that Brock's one fight deal was for a minimum of $5 million. And absolutely, positively, off the record, but his official guess was somewhere between 10 and 15 million for one fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't say
so
for sure.
So you were talking on the hotline, you're just like, you know, this could cost him a lot of money. I'm just like, well, $15 million, I think he's going to be all right, Wade.
I first of all, I don't think Coach understands what off the record. Who was saying that, Chael or Coach?
Coach was on Busted Open. He had spoken with Chael, and he was just like, he goes,
okay, so here's, okay, that's, no, Johnny, I got it. So I got everything else. Two things.
Yeah.
I like Chael, but I don't, I know people who know Chael well, who will tell you off the record, will tell me off the record, Chael exaggerates to entertain. And so I do not consider Chael a grounded, reliable source on a topic such as this. There's things Chael is very smart and very, you can learn from him.
Sure.
He is going to be bombastic, make news, and exaggerate on purpose to, quote, entertain, because he doesn't see his public persona as having journalistic integrity, but rather an obligation to create a buzz. Number two, I don't think Coach understands what off the record means, which is kind of scary. And number three, $10 to $15 million is an absurd number that I would say 99.9% chance is not an accurate figure. But Todd Martin and I on The Fix yesterday were talking about it. We did some math. I took out the calculator. I do think 3 to $5 million is a much more likely range and a very impressive number. But, yes, Brock. And Brock won't lose money, even if he gets decimated by Mark Hunt, if he has a guaranteed payday of 3 to 5, maybe top $7 million. I don't think there's any math that makes sense to do more than that for USC, and I don't think they would. It'd be ridiculous, and Brock wouldn't be worth it. But I could see them offering Brock $10 million if John Jones got arrested or injured again, you know, and a couple of, you know, I mean, like then they have these free paydays, they have extra money, but they're not going to do that otherwise. Johnny, Brock will not lose money because he has a guaranteed contract with WWE. So even if it gets decimated by Mark Hunt, he still is going to make the money he was going to make. So who ends up losing money is WWE, because Brock now is weaker. You know, Brock is weakened because he's no longer the beast. He's a guy who got beat up by a fringe top 10 heavyweight in Mark Hunt. So in that sense, it's definitely financially good for Brock in that way, although I think his marketing ability to get a new deal after this current WWE deal expires, I think in 2018, would certainly be diminished. Go ahead, Johnny, yeah.
My guess is it's closer to the $5 million mark than what Coach threw out there. That's my personal guess.
Yeah.
I think it is really close to that $5 million mark. And I think, you know, despite the Vegas betting odds, I think Mark Hunt is more of a tomato can than they're letting on. And I think there's one more fight after this. And I think they're going to finally work out the deal with Fedor. And I think that's the UFC pay-per-view main event. I think that is a $10 million payday for Brock Lesnar. So there's not one pro wrestling / MMA fan that I know that would not pay to see Brock Lesnar versus Fedor.
Yes, I think Brock Lesnar Fedor is an eight-figure payday for Brock. And it should be. And I don't think they need to have an undercard. I think the undercard can be Night Brazil in terms of marketability, or Fight Night UK in terms of marketability. Like, it just doesn't – I mean, that's going to be Tyson-esque to see that, because every MMA fan from the past 15, 20 years is going to want to see that fight, even though it might be coming, you know, 6 to 9 years too late. So, yes, but Brock needs to get through Mark Hunt. So
Mayweather-Pacquiao.
What's that?
Mayweather-Pacquiao was 10 years too late, and they still spent the money and broke every record there was.
Let me say this. Yeah, when I say 10 years too late, 10 years too late to be, like, relevant to heavyweight contendership, and 10 years too late to be when people ideally would have seen the fight. But you're right. The money's still there. The name value is absolutely still there. And as Todd Martin pointed out on the VIP Fix audio show yesterday with me, heavyweights tend to peak later in terms of marketability and sometimes even fight skills. And so – obviously I'm intrigued by that, but Brock needs to beat Mark Hunt. Todd Martin predicted And Todd knows his stuff. He's a go-to guy he's a freelancer for Sherdog, go-to guy for many MMA podcasts. Really respected opinion, even though he was completely wrong on Michael Bisping.
Seconds.
And I totally called that Michael Bisping was going to win in the first round. you know, he's predicting Mark Hunt, the most likely finish is Mark Hunt overwhelming Brock with punches early. Now, I think Todd underestimated how much diverticulitis affected Brock in his last two fights. I think it greatly affected Brock and changed the course of how he reacted and trained and the psyche of getting in the octagon thinking a punch could
60 seconds.
You know, could cause irreparable health issues. I just don't think you can discount that mentally. But, yes, it's huge news. And really, I mean, you talked about ROH. We got NXT TakeOver last night. We got TNA Slammiversary. We got ROH. We've got USC 200. We have Money in the Bank. We have the draft. We have a Battleground, which could be more interesting than it would be otherwise because of the draft, and SummerSlam. I know I'm leaving stuff out because we got the poll up on pwtorch.com right now with a whole list of summer events asking readers.
Real quick, July 17th, Johnny and June's. Johnny Fairplay makes his return to Revolution Wrestling Association or whatever they're called. And I'm guessing Bruce will probably
10 seconds.
Yep. Well, I mean, we've got June 19th, New Japan Dominion in Osaka, New Japan World Pro. We got Shine 35 on iPay-per-view. We have Evolve 62 and 63 on iPay-per-view. So, I mean, there's some cool stuff in June. Absolutely.
The Cruiserweight series.
Thank you. Yes, on the network. I mean,
the Cruiserweight.
This is one of the best. This is one of the best summers I can remember to be a pro wrestling fan with a high-speed internet connection and cable. You know, I mean, the number of things that you can watch, the diverse styles, meaningful events, historically significant events. It's a lot of fun. We're just almost out of time, Johnny. I want to sneak in one more phone call and one more email. And if you've got another topic you want to sneak in before we wrap up, you can do that too. But I want to get to 773 real quick. 773, you've been on hold a while. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Reginald from Portland. How are you guys doing today?
Good. I'm glad you called. What do you got for us, Reginald?
Great. Oregon or Maine?
Oregon.
Okay.
No, you can't say Oregon
Portland.
If you're from Oregon. You got to know that.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Great.
What's your question or topic?
Good. I have a really quick question for you guys. More of a comment. I was listening to the show, and I completely agree about what you were saying, Wade, about a certain wrestling personality and their ideas about things. Because I actually do listen to what Mr. You know who's stuff, you know, just because I'm a fan in general. And I don't like to judge. I just listen regardless if I agree or not. But it's really telling when someone says outright that they don't watch NXT because they can't stand the fans. I mean, what does that say? You know what I mean? Like the absolute disconnect and like the clinging on to the Attitude Era. Like, you can seriously take a drink for every time that dude says that word.
Yeah.
But when you look at it on paper, the openings were good. The openings were rad. And the main events were great. The mid-card is where it just, like, blank, fell flat. I mean, you look at how, especially the women were treated in that era, giving birth to hands. You pretty much had, like, a circus sideshow. It pretty much was like, and I'm originally from the Midwest, and believe me, I would know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like watching like your next door neighbors in a trailer.
Yeah.
You know, and I prayed to dear God in heaven I don't ever see it again. It was good for what it was. You know what? It brought in, you know, what we got. But you know what though? Like stuff like NXT, and especially stuff, you know, the recent, you know, the end, like that event, and that over at New Japan, everybody was talking about Ricochet. Like, that's where it's at for me. Like, I think it's really important to be optimistic, like, to be optimistic and look towards the future. And I think hopefully if this brand split goes that way, we'll see more of that, especially on SmackDown. That's all I have to say, guys. I'll look you out there. Thank you. Thank you very
awesome.
Much.
Thanks, Reginald. Anything to respond to there, Johnny? I mean, just good comments from Reginald.
I mean, I he's talking about our good friend Vinny Roo. I did his podcast, as I said, like a month or so ago, and he actually promised to go back and watch Sami Zayn versus Nakamura from NXT TakeOver Dallas.
Yeah.
So I haven't followed up to see what he thought, but I mean, but yeah, that's his ex. Like, you know, I'm with the caller. It's you know, I love wrestling. Wrestling's my life, but I won't watch NXT because I don't like the fans. It's like, well, then turn the volume down.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. If it bothers you that bad, I mean, like, I hate Monday Night Raw's commentators. I still watch because I like wrestling.
Yeah.
So either you like wrestling or you don't.
That's just an excuse to not watch something that is really good, that flies in the face of every philosophical booking idea you have, that is the hottest product for really good reasons that you don't understand. Or something else, but that's my theory. Okay, here's an email. Let's go to Louis M., who says, he's from Brooklyn, New York. I've been a follower of PW Torch for about 6 years. I became so engrossed with the team's analysis, I finally felt obliged to subscribe to the VIP membership. I must say that I love it, and I feel it is totally worth every penny. PWTorch.com/goVIP for full details. 90-second mobile sign-up, so 90 seconds you can be a VIP member. Oh, by the way, I get asked this all the time. I got to say this more often. Our VIP audio show, 75 to 100 per month, VIP exclusive, ad-free, flagship shows that I host, real wide range of cool nostalgia stuff too. They are compatible on iPhone and Android with many popular podcast apps, Beyond Pod, Dog Catcher, Downcast, all kinds of them. We have a whole list of them with step-by-step instructions. Our audio feed is password protected. It's for customers. It's for members only. But it absolutely works on iPhone and Android. So if you're worried that you're going to have to stream them or it's going to be complicated, it's not. It'll take you 1 minute. We've got a whole step-by-step instruction, even if you're not really well-versed in how to, you know, where to enter the password. Each individual app, we tell you how to do it, where to go, and you're basically carrying around on your phone access to top shelf analysts and audio and entertaining history and every single day Wade Keller hotline. You're going to be up to date on the latest news and with a point of view added to it. So but I want to address that because I get that on Twitter, and I feel like I need to say that more often because that is how most of us consume our podcasts. It's on our phone. All right, so his question. With that said, after viewing the recent success of American Alpha and just how over they've gotten with NXT crowds, do you think it's possible that Kurt Angle will return and have one last run as a manager for Jordan and Gable while still wrestling on a part-time basis? Johnny, I think there's a chance Angle would manage them. I don't think they need him to be over, but I think it would be a nice way to reintroduce Angle to the WWE family in a meaningful way without having him wrestle. I don't like the idea of Kurt Angle wrestling, and I don't know that what the odds are of him passing a physical, but I think they're probably pretty low given WWE standards now. They're going through, as James Caldwell's done a stellar job on PWTorch.com documenting, the concussion lawsuits. They might face more of those. They don't want to have a double standard with somebody with any kind of physical ailments that might cause disaster or long-term physical harm. I don't think we're going to see Kurt Angle wrestle in WWE again, unless it's he turns on Jordan or Gable and they have an amateur rules contest, you know, something where there's literally no bumps or suplexes even, which would be sad. So to me, I think that's done. But Angle as a personality managing them, I like the idea, Johnny, and I think it could help immediately elevate Jordan and Gable to a high level that might take them a little while otherwise to earn with the fan base.
Well, based on my career past choices in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment, of course, I endorse managers. I love managers. There's nothing more that I hate in wrestling than a babyface manager.
Well,
so I don't like that.
Yeah. Yep.
and secondly, once again, I had a house full of friends last night. We're watching the NXT special. And I had a friend who just got back into wrestling after 20 years and who went to WrestleMania weekend dressed as the Big Boss Man all weekend, so that was good. And he was asking, he's like, you know, what's the deal with American Alpha? And I had a friend from the UK over, and he was just like, oh, they're the next world's greatest tag team. And I'm like, no, they're not. I'm like,
when I first saw their outfits, I thought that. They're the next Rock and Roll Express. I don't see World's Greatest Tag Team whatsoever in them. So they're not Team Angle. And I think the only thing that, you know, I guess you have Gable's background and the outfit, but other than that, there is nothing. They're their own entity. They don't need anyone else. They're baby faces, just the two of them. They're great. So, I mean, I look at Gable now, and I see more The Rock than anything else.
Yeah.
He's got that face. He's ready to go.
Do you mean The Rock or Jason Jordan?
Sorry to ruin it, but that's...
You like Gable as The Rock or Jordan as The Rock?
The one with the short hair. The other one reminds me of Ricky Santana, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Okay.
But he's a scrapper. He's ready for that. He's ready to make that hot tag, brother.
Yeah. I'm with you on babyface managers in general. I can live with Kurt Angle being the guy who is at their side, training them, advising them, taking them to the next level, and then they eventually turn on him, or he turns on them. And if he turns on them and goes heel, then he can manage a different team against them and be the heel manager too. And I think Kurt is so talented on the microphone, and that if he's got his faculties in order to cut promos, I think he can elevate a heel tag team and kind of do what maybe Paul Ellering's about to do with the with the new tag team. So I don't know. We'll see.
If it's a short term thing like you're suggesting, just to branch out to that next heel tag team, I'm all for. I mean, shoot, he can bring in the Revival.
Yeah.
So that would be cool. But yeah, babyface managers, I love Kurt. I think Kurt's great. I mean, but if I'm picking someone as a player coach to work as a babyface manager, even though I hate it and I wouldn't,
yeah,
I would pick Daniel Bryan over Kurt Angle. But that's just me.
Yeah. All right, Johnny, thanks so much. Late pinch hitter, but I appreciate it.
Oh.
We got to have the last 2 weeks, Matt Morgan and had to bow out. Matt McCarthy had to bow out. So maybe we'll find another Matt for next week and see if we have better luck. But no, Matt Morgan and Matt McCarthy, two of my favorite guests, and circumstances came up. And I know with both of them where they, Matt was still hoping to be here on time, but wasn't able to make it. So hope we can get them back on the show maybe in the next 2 weeks in a row. But Johnny, I always enjoy my conversations with you. You do your homework, you know your stuff. You've got some fun anecdotes about different major players, including your Road Warrior story. You listen to a lot of podcasts, and you know your history, and you bring it, and you brought it again, so I appreciate it.
Real quick, I heard you ask Bruce, but I on the Bruce Mitchell Audio, available on VIP, of course, through PW Torch Show by Go VIP. What do you think about the Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy? I loved it. I thought it was so great. I mean, but that, like, someone asked me on Twitter, and I'm just like, I think it's the best thing they've done since hiring me in TNA. That's my official stance on this.
You know, I pay you all these compliments, and now you've got to go put yourself over at the end. I haven't seen this week's show yet, so I want to watch this week's show and do a Keller Hotline.
Well, no, last week. Last week.
Let me. You know what? Because I'm short on time, Johnny, and I kind of want to save that for the Keller Hotline. I want to do an arc talking about this whole thing, and I want to see this week's show before I do a lot on it. I talked with I talked to Bruce about it on Sunday and gave some of my thoughts.
Bruce hated it.
Right, and I was really trying to hold back a little bit. I want to, because I do with NXT, when there's a special, I kind of do an all NXT show, the Keller Hotline. I want to do an all TNA Keller Hotline in the next couple days here, and leading into Slammiversary. So let me save it for then. But I am
great.
I like your giving your thoughts on it to offset Bruce a little bit, or counter Bruce's take on it. I've said a little bit about the Matt Hardy thing so far, but not a lot. So anyway, there's a teaser, VIP members.
great. Something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for joining us here at PW Torch Livecast. If you didn't, by the way, last week our fill-in guest was a best-of interview with Lanny Poffler from 2011. Some great insight on Vince McMahon, Randy Macho Man Savage, his days as the poet, his days managing Mr. Perfect. Lanny, one of my favorite Livecast guests, one of my favorite people on this show. Really encourage you to check that out. Odds are we've had so much growth since 2011 that you had not had a chance to hear that interview before, and it is absolutely worth your time. If you go to pwtorchlivecast.com, you will find a list of our recent interviews. And you can go back and hear the Kevin Nash interview, the Kevin Eck interview, the Alex Greenfield interview, the Jim Ross interview. We had four just hot interview Thursdays in a row that absolutely are still worth your time to go back and listen to. So I hope you'll check that out. We are currently in the top 25 of all sports podcasts. We regularly rank as one of the first, the top two or three all pro wrestling topic podcasts. And we thank all of you for that and for your continued support of what we do. And I am so proud of the team of hosts that we have and our great recurring guests, such as Johnny Fairplay, too. Next Tuesday, Jason Powell joins me from ProWrestling.net for our reunion after, I think, 6 weeks apart, because Bruce hosted while I was traveling last time Jason was on. So you can look forward to that on Tuesday. But first and foremost, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant from EastCoastCast.com. Get together. Bruce Mitchell, the Torch senior columnist, and Travis from the East Coast Cast get together as usual on Friday to get back together, because Bruce missed last Friday. So it'll be a reuniting of them. A lot to talk about, including Brock Lesnar, NXT TakeOver, TNA Slammiversary, and more. So join them tomorrow, 7 Eastern. Support them with your phone calls and emails. And until then, on behalf of my guest, Johnny Fairplay, and all our great hosts and great callers and great emailers, this is PW Torch editor Wade Keller signing off for today.